Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden. I'm working
at an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, hello, everyone. Chuck Bonnell, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show. True Straight Up, brought to you by...
Brought to you by HappyTrees.co and Mountain West Wellness Advanced Acupuncture and Chinese Medicine. You want me to introduce Dave, or you want to introduce Dave?
Oh, Miss Dave, I'm writing up a resolution I promised him. So if you see me ducking out, you'll know I'm finishing up the resolution.
Oh, for Dave, yeah. Don't duck out. Don't duck out. It's Party Friday. Oh, I want to let folks know you're going to want to hang around for the final Biden groper video. I don't know if you've seen this video, but you got to.
You'll want to see it.
You'll want to see this.
It's one of your better groper videos.
It is. And little children should not be allowed to watch. Anyway, but that's coming up. But anyway, no, go
adults
ahead.
Adults only. All right, now we have former representative and now state party chairman, Dave Williams, who came up with a coup that has befuddled the Republican Party to date with the Libertarian Party. To assure our candidates do not face spoiler candidates. And I'll let Dave explain it all. It's got enormous praise for this, other than the former chair who said, oh, who cares? I could have done that. Oh, of course, I never did, but big deal. Dave, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always good to speak with you guys.
You know, it's kind of funny, Dave. We had lunch yesterday with a guy, just to let you know, who said, I don't really even understand all of this, but from what I've seen, the rhinos don't like it, so I know I do. So,
yeah, that's a pretty good indicator that we're headed in the right direction. Right now, there's a lot of noise coming from failed leaders, failed strategists, the people that kind of put us in this position that we find ourselves in with a super majority Democrat Party rule. So I'm not really concerned with what Chrissy Burton Brown or any Dick Wadhams or any of those other guys think, because what they did sure as hell didn't work.
Yeah.
So we're going to go in a different direction, and we're going to see what we can do to start winning again.
Tell us about the agreement you reached in principle with the Libertarian chair.
Yeah, for sure. This agreement that we were able to come to terms on was that essentially if we ran better candidates that were truly committed to limited government and protecting individual freedoms and liberties, then the Libertarian Party would not interfere and run their candidates in our partisan races. I thought that was a pretty good compromise. I, for the life of me, can't understand why any Republican would be against limiting government
right.
and protecting individual liberties. We have a lot of candidates pay lip service to that come election time. So why don't we go ahead and make it official and put pen to paper and make something happen?
Why don't you explain for folks, because I think a lot of times people, I mean, this to me even comes down to sort of a core election integrity issue, too, because explain to people who maybe don't understand some of the ins and outs of how politics really works, how the spoiler candidates were impacting Republican races and essentially and how intentional that was.
You bet. I mean, we saw this happen. I mean, we've seen it happen a lot, but we've seen it happen definitely in 2022. Two races come to mind. One was the 8th congressional district. That was where Barb Kirkmeyer lost to Congresswoman Caraveo. And she lost, I believe, by less than a percentage point, but the Libertarian candidate walked away with about 4 or 5%, something like that. And I think by all accounts, everyone understands that the Libertarian candidate spoiled that election. And if you look at that same area but different office, this was the State Board of Education race. where our candidate, Peggy Probst, lost to the Democrat, and that was because another third party, it was the American Constitution Party, ran their candidate and certainly spoiled the election in that regard. So these guys can have an impact, and now there's this thought that Democrats deliberately put these third party candidates up so that they can ensure, or rather maximize, their Democrat candidates' chances of winning. And it wasn't just those congressional races. It's also various state legislative races on down. And we saw a few of those as well this go around. So my whole idea was, okay, well, let's just take it off the board. Let's take it out of the equation. Let's go ahead and talk to the party leadership with the Libertarians and see if we can get this done. And we have an agreement in principle. Now it's on us. We have to perform. We have to bring about better candidates. And if we're going to run someone like Joe O'Day in Congressional District 8, he can do that. The establishment can do that. But it's probably going to cost us anywhere between 3 to 5 points, if not more. And it might very well give Caraveo a reelection that she otherwise does not deserve.
Talk about then some of the, well, let me back up a second. We know even nationally, the Democrats openly admit that this is part of their strategy, right? To fund people. They're not really libertarians. They just call themselves libertarians for purposes of being in the election and being the spoiler candidate, because some people will say, oh, well, that's a libertarian. I don't like the Democrat or the Republican. I'll vote for the libertarian. What about some of the other parties? I mean, we've got the no name party now, I think.
No label, no labels.
Yeah, no name, no labels. That's a Bob O'Prey party. No, the no labels party. What about, are you talking to any of these other organizations too?
Oh, we want the.
I've engaged, obviously we engaged the Libertarian Party. We're still talking with the American Constitution Party right now and see what we can get done on that end. But Chuck's right. I'm fine with no labels putting a candidate up. I'm fine with the Green Party putting a candidate up. We just want to make sure that we don't have third parties that are going to adversely affect the Republican nominee.
That's right. Well, let me get your analysis then of then, because I know, to me, you look at some of the people who are backing the No Labels Party, and they might as well be, you know, Rhino headquarters kind of people, right? And only big business rhinos. Your analysis of why, because I actually agree with you and Chuck too, why you think that's going to hurt the Democrats more than us?
You know, I think just because of what we're seeing they stand for. I mean, a better sort of analogy is probably the Green Party. I mean, we all know they're crazy nuts in that party. But that's, you know, the Democrats are very much aligned in a lot of ways with those folks. And so when you have a voter who, you know, sees a Democrat but a Green Party candidate, or even a no labels candidate on the ballot, but they're upset with the Democrats because they didn't go far enough, then they'll likely protest vote and give it to one of those two nominees. And so I'm for it. And that's I think pretty much where it's going to happen. If it does occur, I think that's what would happen. It would hurt them more than
okay. Well, and to clarify too, first, because I've heard some people say, oh, well, we're giving control of our party over to the Libertarians, but that's not it at all, right? You're just saying there's certain values that we share with the Libertarian Party, which are good values, and we're not giving them control. They're just saying, hey, if you guys run a good, solid candidate, no, you know, limiting government, et cetera, then yeah, then we're not going to bother to field a candidate and split the vote, right?
Well, first off, I would say for the establishment critics out there, like Dick Wadhams or anyone else who might be complaining about this, they for years have allowed the media and the Democrats to dictate the kind of nominees we've had in the party. So it's a bit of the pot calling the kettle black, number one. Yeah. Number two, the Libertarians, all they're asking is that we keep our promises. If our promise is to limit government and to promote liberty and freedom, I don't think that's too much to ask.
Right.
So, no, they're not dictating anything other than the standards we set for ourselves. And if we can't keep our promises, well, then maybe we don't deserve to govern anyway.
Right. Well, and it is, as like I said, this friend of ours was like, I don't understand some of the ins and outs of that, but he just said, all I do anymore is I look at who complains about it. And that's why I make my decision. And he said, I'm looking at the people when KBB is complaining about it, I know it must be a good move. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And even, and you know, what's so, I think, hypocritical about this is that, you know, KBB said this was a problem, you know, yeah. Dick Wadham said this was a problem. John Caldera said this was a problem. All these folks said this was a problem. And here I am trying to bring a solution about to this, and all they want to do is complain about it. You know why? You want to know why? And this is what KBB said specifically. She said post 2022 election that she didn't think the Libertarian candidates or the American Constitution Party candidates were interested in not fielding candidates. Well, you want to know why they might not be interested in filling candidates? Is because no one asked them. No one actually decided to go try to make a deal with them and build a coalition with them. Instead, you know, we had people that were too busy caring about their own self-interest rather than advancing the cause of liberty and freedom in Colorado. The fact that we have Jared Polis weighing in on this a third time.
Wow.
Tells me that we're right on track.
What did what did our beloved governor have to say?
Well, on the first day he tried to downplay it, he tried to mock the deal, but the fact that he even weighed in on the on the topic tells us that it's significant. And then today, you know, he's on Twitter saying I would love for the Republican Party and the Libertarians to field more pro freedom and pro liberty candidates. And it just begs the question, why is the governor swinging down? You know, why is he weighing in on this? And the only conclusion is they're worried about it. They're worried that we're cutting into their narrative, their false narrative that somehow Jared Polis is this moderate or this libertarian, which he is not.
Right.
He doesn't get to define these terms anymore, especially as we build these coalitions. So we're headed in the right direction, and this is the way to go. But if we're going to succeed, we have to uphold our end of the bargain. We have to field better candidates. Period.
Right. Well, and you're
and if we don't, you know, then maybe people should have a choice.
Right.
Somebody, if you get a big government Republican, then people probably deserve a choice out there. That would be the Libertarian candidate. And so I'm sure they're terrified that Republicans will in fact field better candidates and field candidates that stand up for the principles that are set forth in the platform. It's really the national platform, as I found out. We don't have a state platform, but it's just such a win-win. Now, it's not a win for rhinos. We all recognize that. Because, you know, they're always telling everybody, well, elect me because I'm a lot more electable. Now you're going to find out that who's more electable, the rhino candidate, who the libertarians will field the candidate, or the grassroots candidate who they won't. That'll be one of Wadham's great talking points just walked out from the room.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's time to put up or shut up. These guys always complain about the libertarians spoiling their elections. And you know what? Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But this go around, we have the potential to take it off the board, to eliminate it from the equation. Let's just go ahead and keep our promises and offer up better nominees.
Well, and I love the fact that, you know, KBB and Dick Wadhams and all that are always going, you know, we want to be a big tent party. And you kind of go, oh, yeah, but not including those pesky libertarians. No.
Dick Wadhams doesn't actually believe in that. He in fact, he hates our base. He thinks we're the problem. And if we were to start actually doing more of this, his head would explode. So I don't believe, you know, he's the poster child for country club Republicans that, you know, don't actually care about limiting government, but only want power. So,
exactly.
You know,
well, and Dave, you know, you're doing that.
He's a fail beater.
You're doing that pesky thing of trying to find solutions, right? I mean, we've seen like the 20 Republicans who voted to not censure Adam Schiff, right? There are too many Republicans out there who all they want to do is have their own power. They could care less about actually winning as long as they maintain their money and their power base. And then you come along and you're like, I know, I'm going to think outside the box and maybe come up with a strategy to actually win a race or two. And it's like, well, whoa, we can't
have that, cowboy. None of that.
Hey,
You know what's amazing is that the Central Committee votes to go in a new direction, and these and essentially rejects the leadership and the strategies of the past and these past leaders, and then all these past leaders are running to the press because the press wants them to talk about what's going on, and all they can do is complain about how we're making changes when when it should be obvious that we need to. We've been losing for like 20 years. Why the hell would I replicate what KBB wanted to do or what Dick Wadhams did? You know, right. these people don't deserve to be in leadership anymore because they've demonstrated they can't win.
Right.
We're going in the direction, period.
Let me ask, because that kind of leads in, and the GOP secretary, Anna's on too, and she's in the chat section of the Zoom. She says, if we count our own ballots and opt out, we can ensure that the candidate that gets on the general will be in line with what the libertarians want and will follow through with the deal. Which leads me to the other thing. Yeah, which leads me to the other thing. That was a great segue, Anna. You sent out another letter today talking about fundraising for the litigation. And I know Chuck is obviously on one of the committees here. Can you talk about that a little bit, the letter that you sent out and what you're hoping people can do?
Yeah, this is critical. This has been, 2 years in the making, unfortunately. I mean, again, the past administration did not care to make this a priority. In fact, they did everything to avoid it or downplay it or not be involved with it. Shame on them. The one thing that united or seemed to unite all Republicans on the Central Committee 2 years ago was the lawsuit. And the fact that we didn't fund it, we didn't nurture it, we didn't promote it.
The Republican Party killed it by not signing on to the one saying waiting for an opinion that they apparently may have not even asked for till more or less recently.
And we're talking to some people.
I think it's no question. There's no debate that the past administration did everything they could to kill it, or at least not be involved with it. And now we're just trying to uphold our end of the bargain. The party membership wanted this. We're pursuing it. We put an email out saying, now's the time. We have two ways that people can donate. They can donate directly to our party, or they can donate through the Claremont Institute. But we're moving forward. We're going to challenge this unconstitutional law because it's killing our state, and it's certainly making our party irrelevant.
Right. And we're talking about, and Chuck, you can explain it real quick if you would, the lawsuit that we're working on, and actually I think it's going to be filed pretty soon, right, to try to get the Colorado Republican Party from being forced to participate in the open primary, right?
Yeah, there's a case in California, really fought by the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, but of course the Republicans dropped out before victory. And it said that, right of association, you get to have your primaries how you want to. You don't have to have Democrats and unaffiliated in your primary. So having lost that at the Supreme Court level, they made it almost impossible. And you have 75% of all your members, and everyone who votes doesn't appear is a no vote. And you have to do it every 2 years for the rest of time
to opt out, you mean?
Yeah, to be able to opt out. So hopefully with the Republican Party, and we got thrown out of court by Judge Kane in a really sad.
He's a pretty progressive judge. He wasn't going to rule on anything that might help the Republican Party.
No, he was not. I mean, he's a Jimmy Carter appointee. But now the Republican Party is going to have standing because we will be signing on, and it's going to be a real Donnybrook. And I think it's just, as Dave said, the party has moved on. They've had enough of the Ryan calls and the Dick Wadhams and everything else. And they always those guys say, well, why don't you try running it? And I go, okay. And then when you do something great like Dave did with the Libertarian Party, go, oh, okay, that's terrible. You know, you're working to actually win. We're not allowed to do that. That's not our job.
And Dave, then you're kind, I guess if you would, then your sort of thoughts and on the litigation lawsuit and again, maybe and where people can go if they want to help out, because I know they do need to help out.
Yeah, you bet. Well, there's I actually didn't memorize the donation link, but
oh, okay.
There was an email that we sent out that can direct you on how to donate.
Right.
If you go to Kevin Lundberg's website, there's also instructions on that, and very soon we'll update our own website to make sure that people can go to our website and get engaged on that front. But the lawsuit it's necessary, it's critical. I think we have merit, and ultimately it's a First Amendment issue, it's a freedom of association issue, and this law is unconstitutional, and it was designed for one purpose and one purpose only, to weaken the Republican Party.
Yes.
And we have to fight it.
Right. Let me, I guess, anything else? Every time I turn around, you guys are putting out another letter or doing something else. What, I mean, anything else you can share with us that you're working on or trying to get up and running or doing?
You bet. We're going to, very soon, I'll be laying out sort of what we're going to be doing with the presidential cycle. We want to entice presidential campaigns and candidates to come to Colorado and pay attention to us. We have 37 delegates that are up for grabs. And we'll be introducing a series of changes to our methods so as to ensure that no one neglects us. We want candidates to know that we have a good system here that will really benefit them if they pay attention. So I'll give you a hint. What we want to do is we want to bind delegates to two rounds. That and a few other things should very well signal to the candidates that our delegates are a premium here. And in our primary, it's going to be scheduled for March 5th. So that's Super Tuesday. We are a state that does need to be paid attention to, and we're going to make sure that those candidates do, in fact, come to Colorado and compete.
Well, and I know you were involved and the last time when Donald Trump was running, you were trying to get him to come here. And I think you saw firsthand, right, that the candidates were, because of the way the Colorado Republicans were doing things then, the candidates, you know, they have limited time and money, and Colorado is one state they felt they could afford to ignore, right?
Yeah, no question. I mean, Donald Trump has not received a very warm welcome in Colorado traditionally, and that's because of people like Dick Wadhams and other folks within the party that have done everything they can to try and work against the former president. We're not doing that. We're going to welcome everyone. You know, everyone's going to get a fair shake. No one's going to rig the system or anything like that. We want everyone to understand that Colorado is, we got new management within the party, and everyone's going to be treated fairly.
All right.
I have an example of how far Colorado has gone down in the estimation of anybody is that not a single presidential candidate, and there are plenty of them out there, would come to the Western Conservative Summit. Not a single one. So I think it's, once again, Dave doing a great job. Let's make it so that people do want to come to Colorado and compete for our delegates.
Yeah, absolutely. And they will. I promise you, we're going to make it very enticing for them, and they will come.
All right. Well, Dave, I think that is good. We'll look forward to that. Chuck, any other questions before we let Dave go?
Oh, we can do tons of them, but I just want to congratulate Dave on getting this libertarian thing done, because everybody for 30 years have complained about thing, and he's the first one who actually has gotten something done. So that's tremendous.
All right, Dave. Hey, thank you for your time. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks again, guys.
Yep,
okay,
thank
bye-bye.
You. Republican Chair Dave Williams. You know, and Chuck, it is so funny. You're right. As Dave pointed out, and you pointed out, the more establishment people always complained about this and cited it as a reason why they lost, but they never actually did anything. And I think that's what we're seeing. There's a new category of Republicans out there who actually want. Well, we've got dogs arriving. I pardon the chaos here. But we have a new category of Republicans who actually want to win and are doing something about winning, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this libertarian thing is just so perfect, and to have KBB and Dick Wadhams and the Democratic press wail about it is wonderful. A wonderful sound. It's a
That's
wonderful
right.
sound.
I may have, okay, so just so you know, my daughter's dog just arrived, was dropped off.
That's
So
not good news.
no, the dog's going. I wanted to switch gears talking a little bit about this because there's new info. So now we're going to go. If you guys want to unmute yourself and chime in, feel free to do that. If you want to type something in chat, you can do that. If you want to call 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. But wanted to talk about, the corporate media. You're not seeing it anywhere. They're not talking about the Biden bribery thing. But I know there's all kinds of stuff coming out about that. They've identified the Burisma guy, founder, basically is the one who paid the $10 million. I think they're going to be talking now, they being the House Republicans who are investigating this. One of Hunter Biden's partners is going to be talking, I think, to them. And they are probably to the dismay of the Biden family beginning to unravel some of the financial transactions. It was complicated, but I think they're getting to that. And Representative Comer from Kentucky, who was kind of leading this charge, was on Maria Bartiromo, and he said, you guys are throwing around the $10 million bribery scheme. He said, we're so far, he said, we have receipts, I think, for up to 30 million. If we could, Thomas, please play the Comer soundbite.
About a sitting president when he was vice president, influence peddling, accepting money from foreign nationals so that he could turn around and make changes in policy for America so he could pocket the money. If that's true, why isn't he impeached already? And if it's true that the FBI is doing nothing about it, why isn't Christopher Wray on his heels as well?
Those are great questions I ask every day. Look, Christopher Wray has no control over the FBI. One thing that I've learned from dealing with Grassley's whistleblowers is that this is an organization in disarray. No one has confidence in leadership at the top. You have bureaucrats, deep state bureaucrats, who are running the show. They're partisan. They want to get Donald Trump. They don't care what Joe Biden does because Joe Biden can be controlled. So we have issues with the FBI, but my investigation is about following the money. We're going to continue to follow the money. And Maria, I can assure you there's more money that we're going to be able to identify that was transferred between foreign nationals in other countries and the Biden family. This is going to be hard for Joe Biden to explain, and it's not going to go away. This is going to be an issue. And I think eventually the mainstream media will turn on Joe Biden and start asking the real questions. What did your family do to receive all this money?
What number are you up to now? How much have you identified of the money he's taken in from foreign
nationals? We have more bank records coming in, but we're going to exceed 10 million this week, right. And I think we'll get up between 20 and 30 million dollars.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, the 20,
Amazing.
$30 million, right? But nobody, the mainstream media is just ignoring it now. But Donald Trump, oh, he might have waived a document with classified markings, so he needs to go to jail for 400 years, like literally, right?
We've had lots of corrupt administrations in the sense that people in the administration, Harding administration, the Grant administration, but no president who is clearly corrupt. James G. Blaine, who ran from Maine, was corrupt, but he didn't win. And now we got Joe Biden, and the mainstream Pravda is not going to print it, and they're not going to say that Stalin just killed 10 million people in the Ukraine or something. I mean, it's amazing that the press decides to just totally tank. They have no credibility on any issue.
No. Well, and I think it's one thing I would kind of argue. Well, let me, to your point first, I think you raised an interesting point, is that usually the Clintons are probably looking at this and going, oh my God, we are amateurs compared. We thought the Bidens were kind of bumbling, but no, these guys are geniuses. We're like amateurs compared to them. We waited till we were kind of out of office and set up a foundation. And like you said, usually with people like Cory Gardner or congressmen or senators, they retire and then they do this up front, and then they know in the back. And they're going to get, but Joe Biden, he's just apparently flat out just taking millions of dollars into his bank account or his grandchildren's bank account or something. I mean, that's like gutsy. I mean, there's a word, a ballsy, I would say, corrupt, but it's,
right.
You know.
Right. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. I don't think any other time in our history with the press go, oh, well, you know, that's Joe.
Well, again, the Democrats have gotten to the place where the end justifies the means, right? I mean, right. Joe Biden could make a deal with Satan, right? And be, have everything. Have everything turned to gold around him. They'd be like, well, that's okay, as long as they don't get Donald Trump in there. But you know what I do kind of disagree with them is when he says Ray isn't in charge of the FBI. I think that Ray is in charge. I mean, Ray is the director, right? If he wanted to, he could start fixing this. And I think we need to quit giving the FBI cover. And we need to quit saying stuff like, there are all the millions of good FBI agents. It's like, okay, whatever. But there are too many bad ones out there. I mean, or would you disagree with that?
Well, I think Ray has permitted this
right
structure to exist where, you know, he doesn't have to do the dirty work himself, and he can be assured that the operatives will.
Right.
And I think that probably works for the Attorney General's office also.
Well, Merrick Garland and right. Yeah. They could. Well, and to this point, though, I mean, I've been saying for a while, you know, we don't need to defund the FBI. We need to just get rid of it. We need to fundamentally change its nature. We need to remove it. We need to make it more of an get rid of subpoena powers, get rid of arrest powers, make it what it used to be, which is just much more of sort of an investigative help kind of thing, right? They have great forensics. They have good. They have a lot of people and they can chase down stuff, but they need to do so at the order, I think, of local law enforcement. When you get right down to it, you don't need the FBI. They don't do anything that local law enforcement can't do. And as I said, then if you don't have an FBI, you don't need the Department of Justice either. Give all the power back to local and state law enforcement agencies, because they're the ones who ultimately are responsible to voters, right? I mean, they still, you know, sheriffs are elected, things like that.
Well, the whole point of having the FBI involved, the whole point of having Department of Justice involved, was because local states were corrupt. You know, the old South, we wouldn't, you know, no white could be convicted, and so we gave more and more power over to the federal government, and now we're finding they are totally corrupt. We're not limiting, getting rid of corruption at the local level. We're increasing it by the FBI now acting as that corrupt political arm.
Right. Well, and we saw in Minnesota, you know, in the wake of the George Floyd stuff, I think the FBI is now going to be basically taking over law enforcement organizations in Minnesota. And that's what they do. They investigate them. And it's a progressive city. So they'll be like, oh, we welcome the FBI coming in to root out systemic racism in our police department. And so, you know what I mean? It's like it's all part of this federalization. Well, but to that, though, I mean, Newt Gingrich, he stole my idea. Because like I said, I've been saying you need to completely restructure the FBI as an organization and just remove its power. If we could please play the Newt soundbite, Thomas.
This is a remarkable country with extraordinary people who are being crippled by their very own government and crippled by an anti-American faction, largely in the universities and to some extent in the news media and in the corporate CEOs and in the bureaucracy. But we have a great capacity to fight our way back. And the truth does have a tendency to come out. You're seeing this happen now with the FBI. I mean, I thought that the Durham report was devastating, followed up on the report of the Inspector General, which was devastating. The fact is we need a bill to break up the Federal Bureau of Investigation and replace it with much more reasonable law enforcement systems and eliminate the entire senior leadership. I mean, it's clearly a corrupted institution, deeply politicized on the left, and the evidence we have is just overwhelming. So I think what you'll see and what you have seen a little bit of in the House, for example, with the investigations and with the things the House Republicans are doing, is you're seeing the beginning of a counteroffensive. The entire Trump candidacy is a counteroffensive against the left, and that's why they hate him. That's why they're afraid of him. And he entered office as the first really non-establishment president.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons, right? I mean, Trump has vowed, and you know he'll do it because he's been on the receiving end of it,
yeah,
right,
absolutely.
For that. A couple of comments. Oh, we should have Jacob. I'm sorry. I just saw this. Is Dave going to work out a ballot chase program? Yeah, yes, I believe they are. From Jim, all those good agents are complicit by not coming forward. Exactly, Jim. And we know the FBI punishes them, but if enough agents come forward, I mean, we do have some whistleblowers, thank goodness. And from Jacob, if these Barisa documents are true, then the U.S. has been backing the wrong side with the Ukraine-Russia war. You know, I just think they just want endless wars. That's what's going on there. That's just another endless war. And, you know, as you know now, there's, well, check your favorite thing, the counter-offensive, which maybe is going on, maybe isn't. I still submit, and I'm kind of joking here, but only kind of, that there is actually no Ukraine war. They're just, if we were had, you know, we should use AI to chase the pictures of the blown up buildings, and we'll find out they were actually blown up, you know, in the Balkans, you know, years and years and years ago, right? That there's no, it's all just a movie set or something like that. Okay. And it's just all designed to keep Americans sending more and more billions and billions of dollars over there.
Well, it's an amazing deal. If you listened to the Western press and Ukrainian propaganda, they're just doing great. They're nothing, you know, they're ready to take Crimea and everything else. If you go to Colonel McGregor, if you go to Scott Ritter and some others, Russia's going to wait until they peter out the counteroffensive, then take over Kherson and Odessa and maybe some of the other parts, and then leave them with the remainder. But I have no idea what's going on there, and I don't think anybody does, to tell you the truth. All you can do is guess, but my guess is closer to being with McGregor and Ritter than the
right.
A Guardian or Daily Mail or any of those.
And this from Jacob. In my opinion, Zelensky threatened Biden that if Biden didn't send the weapons and money to Ukraine, then he, Zelensky, would produce those 17 tapes. Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. I mean, clearly, and I don't even think he'd have to threaten him. I think there's just one hand washing the other there, right? And everybody's getting rich. Wanted to switch gears then too and talk a little bit about crime and stuff in Denver. I've got some great pictures from San Francisco, but I don't know if you guys know, because, you know, this did not get very much coverage really in the local media, but yay, the Nuggets won the championship. We watched, I admit, we were all kind of fair weather fans there, but that's all right. We're on the bus now. But they had the night of the Nuggets, the night that they won, they had chaos downtown. Now, I've covered the Broncos, I've covered the Avs, I've covered many of those, and there's always chaos downtown when, you know, somebody wins a championship. I guess that's just the nature of it. And usually alcohol is involved. But never before was it real. Did you worry about actually getting shot? But during the Nuggets celebration afterwards, 10 people, five or six of them, just innocent bystanders, were shot, apparently in the middle of a drug deal gone bad, as they say. And this is like right kind of by Coors Field, right? Right in the middle of downtown. And the police chief, everybody was horrified about that. But there's like, but we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Happy Nuggets, downtown Denver stuff. So then they had the parade yesterday. And this is a parade in the morning, right? And two people were shot at the freaking parade. It's like, you go to downtown Denver anymore, you've got to wear a bulletproof vest, you know, to go to a parade.
You know, Rev wanted to go to the parade. And I'm not a big sports parade fan. And I already missed out on claiming, oh no, it's too dangerous to go down there, Rev. You could get shot. We're not going because I want to protect you from danger.
Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous. But then what happens is the police chief comes out and he says, there are too many guns on our streets. It's like, No, there are too many criminals on our streets. If you would, and not, it's, this isn't his fault, but it's the judge's fault and the progressive DAs. I guarantee you that I bet the suspects I think they arrested two people who shot the first 10 people. They're probably out already, right? They're probably out already.
They came out the next night and shot a couple more, you know?
But yeah, exactly. I mean, they released people immediately without any kind of bond because they're progressives and they want to destroy cities, basically, is what they want to do. But I think, you know, if you haven't been to downtown Denver, you should go. I mean, you know, Mike Johnson.
Just bring the kitties, bring a picnic
just take a tank or something. Well, I mean, it's hard to describe. And it makes me so sad when I go there because, I mean, I love Denver, right? But you go and you see these homeless encampments. I mean, you can't even walk on the sidewalk in key parts of downtown because it's just homeless things, you know, shanty towns, basically with people passed out, people urinating. I mean, it's, you know, you wonder why we're trying to rejuvenate the 16th Street Mall. It's like, good luck with that, you know? But I want to show you, these are pictures from San Francisco, because this is what's going to happen. It was a filmmaker. Apparently, I got to admit, I wasn't familiar with him. An author, Shelby Steele, and his filmmaker son were in San Francisco shooting, ironically, a documentary on the bad effects of defunding the cops, when they had $30,000 worth of camera equipment stolen right from their car in broad daylight, right on the street. And what I'm going to show you is they apparently got their hands on some surveillance video, and you're going to see the car drive up. They get out, they break the windows. People are walking by on the sidewalk. Nobody gets out their phone and calls 911 or anything like that. Thomas, if we could please play the car break-in video. So for those on the, just listening, you see a car pull up, a guy gets out of the car, and you'll see in a second, he's breaking the windows on that side, and he's going to come around in a second to the other side and break the windows. Now here come people walking by. This guy kind of says, huh, what's that? Oh, nothing to see here.
Yeah. Mind your own business.
Yeah. I mean, that's terrorism there, really, right? Right, now here it comes. Now he's breaking the other window. See, is there any more stuff to steal? Okay, nope, going to run away. Now, what's interesting is they show, and I didn't get this, but they get actually the license plate of the car, right, from a different angle. They call the cops, and the cops are like, okay, well, come on down, file a report. They're like, well, do you want to chase the bad guys? They're like, no, we're busy. So they get to the police department, which is packed by other people who had just had their cars broken into, right? But here, if we could play, you'll see what they did. This is just in broad daylight. If we could please play the broken windows, you can see what they did to the car. And so this is the guy staring in the broken window. And again, no one, I mean, this doesn't look like a bad part of town, right? It just looks like a regular part of town. But they just smashed the windows and grabbed. And you got to wonder, I imagine that, I don't think they were surveilling them. I think it must have just been random, you know? So they must just, and Elon Musk tweeted in response to the story, Chuck, he's like, oh yeah, my employees can't really park in the street in San Francisco because that's what it's like. But I mean, I submit to you, that's what, I mean, I don't know. How many years do you think Denver's away from that if we're not there already?
Well, I think we're lucky in the fact that we have a highly progressive young mayor. I think
Mike Johnston,
he's promised to destroy Denver in a year. Right. I think the promise was to end homelessness, but by that he meant destroy Denver. And I think he'll work hard. He's young, he's ambitious. He can make a national name for himself by destroying Denver. You know, we hear a lot about Chicago and all the debt there and a lot about San Francisco, but Denver's not gotten its due. We're still considered, on a crime-ridden basis, a cow town.
Right.
But I think Mike, with his billionaire out-of-state donors, can destroy the city within a year, and I think he'll do what he's promised to do indirectly.
And you're right. I mean, when John Hickenlooper was mayor, he promised to end homelessness in 10 years. Well, it's been like...
And he later admitted that was all bullshit, but yeah.
So Mike Johnson, here's how he's going to end homelessness. Raise your hand if you think this will work. Mike Johnson's going to end homelessness by building the homeless people a bunch of little like houses and little homeless camps, right? So that'll end it. You know, that'll end it. That'll end it. Because as soon as...
houses come into your neighborhood.
Right. And as soon as because if you're a homeless person, you know, and I'm sure they'll allow, you know, the drugs or whatever you want there. So if you're like, oh, hey, Denver's building us little houses. Now, we don't want to stay there during the day because we'd rather stay in our little, there's so many issues going on. And I, again, submit, it's even wrong to call these people homeless. Many of these people are not actually homeless. Most of these people have places they could go. They choose to, one woman I remember interviewing her, she said, I'm just home free. You know, and she's like, I like to do drugs all day, right? It's hard to do that when you have a job and everything like that. And you just stay here on the street, the drugs are nearby, everything's are nearby. These are not, so him to say, oh, we're just going to build them homes, it's like, well, that'll solve it in a jiffy, huh?
Well, because, you know, they're not going to force them. I mean, they could call prisons mini home complexes, because you got, you know, a jail cell is a mini home. And so these people are not going to they don't want to go to the mini homes.
Right, right.
And you know, I mean, they're going to be just hell holes. And the more you build them, the more people will come. Or if you guarantee, like New York did, the right to shelter, well, then you can just keep on building and building and building.
There you go. And like Jim says, it'll just give them a better place to store the stuff they steal.
That's yeah. True.
Have you got Johnny online too? Hey, Johnny, welcome. Thank you for calling in.
I was taking a step further. I have a blind friend in Loveland, and he was going looking for housing. And I wish he would have had his reporter out, because this is hard to believe. He says, the lady, I guess maybe she accidentally let it slip to her. She realized, well, it's a blind guy. Who's he going to tell? But she said that the priority is the illegal immigrants. First,
what?
Then they'll get to the rest of us.
I
wish you would record that.
Wow. Well, you know that's true, right? In New York, they're kicking the homeless people. I mean, in the hierarchy of victim categories, right? If you're an illegal immigrant, if you are a transgender illegal immigrant, you could like rule the country, I think. Yes. I mean, they're kicking the homeless people out of the hotels now so that they can move the illegal immigrants into them. So that's crazy.
They're going to the mini homes.
So they'll go to the mini homes. John, what did your friend say or do then?
Well, he got on a bunch of lists, but like I said, he's not on the list. I mean,
yeah, he's not on the list that counts.
So you know, he said he's going to be couch surfing for a while, and you know, that's just the way it is in our sanctuary city,
yeah,
here in Colorado. And then as far as like downtown, I live not too far from there, and my wife didn't want me to go because you know I was going to go down and check it out. And what actually happened is right by our bank on 17th and Curtis.
Right.
So I could have been in that mix, just, you know, going into the bank, you know, because I have, you know people there and stuff like that. And thinking that that would be the most safest place because it's daytime.
Right.
In a crowd.
Right. It's a parade. It's a parade.
Hooray. Hooray. Shooting time.
It's like, well, that's a thing. It's, you know, again, there's statistics that show it's not like if you have like 10 shootings typically over the course of whatever a month, it's not typically 10 different shooters. Generally, it's two or three shooters shooting multiple times at multiple people, right? And so that's the thing. It's like when you lock people up, it tends to solve crimes or prevent crimes. But when you let them go without any repercussions and they know there are no repercussions, this is what happens. So I think it's time for you to switch banks, Johnny. I'm sorry to say.
All right. Have a good one.
All right. Thank you, Johnny. Thank you for your call.
We want to get to our video.
We have to get to the groper. Okay. So yesterday at the White House, Eva Longoria, was there, and they were, Biden and Jill were talking about, she's got some new movie out that she directed. I'm not really sure why this was a big deal, because it's about the guy who allegedly invented the flaming Fritos, but actually he didn't. I don't know. It's convoluted. But anyway, she was there and she had a movie and they said, well, great movie, great movie. And then Biden, like, rather than shaking her hand at the end of it, he gropes her. And so I'll just play the video and then we can talk about it afterwards. So Thomas, if you could play the Biden groper video, watch his hands.
All right, Biden. Oh, look at that face. Oh, yeah.
You tell me he didn't know where his hands were? It's like, come on, any woman knows, and any guy knows that. And he's like, I don't know. Maybe he thinks because he's a president he can do that. Maybe because he thinks because he's senile he can do that. But that's like, you know, and you can see she's smooth. She's like, oh, I'll hold your hand here now. Just, you know, can you see? And of course, she's not responding because how could you say next time she's going to be like, I'll just do that on Zoom, you know? But you see the snipping hair, you see stuff. And I got to admit, sometimes you can just do that. But you, I don't know. What do you think? To me, are you guys listening or who saw that? What do you think? Do you think there's any doubt that he did that on purpose?
A smile on his face.
I know. He's like, well, yeah. And Thomas says it's just unacceptable. Exactly, Thomas. If you're a, you know, you're a young person, it's like, oh, the president can do it, I guess. Yeah. And Charlene, she put a firm push away on him. I know, but you know what you should have done is you should have smacked him, right?
Yeah.
Because can you imagine if it were Donald Trump, he'd be on trial right now for attacking
him. Well, yeah. Donald Trump has imaginary assault victims. Biden just does it in front of national TV.
Right, right, exactly. Jim says he looks like an old homeless guy. I know, you know, years ago when I was in high school, I worked at a senior living. They just called it senior living then. And I was 16. And, you know, some of the little old men would be gropers, right? And, you know, they thought, oh, I'm a little old man. They can, you know, I can get away with this. But you knew what it was. And that's exactly what Biden. Well, yeah, you know, Jacob. You can't smack the president of the Secret Service.
I think we ought to have a new rule. I mean, once you reach 80, then
Chuck,
you're
free
to do that.
Chuck,
I mean,
says,
they should have guy, you know, they should be able to.
You should be, once you reach 73 and a half, you should be able to say and do what. Yeah, say and do whatever you want.
Teenagers or movie actresses. I mean, that should be some people have something to look forward to. You know, you just look forward to dying in an oncology ward or something. No, no. Everybody, oh, and then people fake their IDs. Oh, I'm really hungry.
A whole new meaning to greasing the palm, says Jacob.
Yeah, yeah,
so just that, exactly. I wanted to show you that on this party Friday.
Just, yeah, because they're partying. The president was partying there.
Thomas says that wasn't even on a Japanese train, it was on TV. That's right. Yeah, they're carrying this live. He doesn't care, he's a president. I mean, what, imagine if it were Hunter up there, we don't even want to go. What,
oh,
that
Hunter, oh man, he'd take out the crack pipe and give her a whiff
and do other things. So okay guys, that's gonna do it on this party Friday. Thank
we
you
just had to end up on a good note, a fun note. One for all you older guys, we're gonna be pushing this this exemption.
Oh, to the crabby old white guys club.
You can look forward to their golden years.
Now we're going
to
be banned from something again, Chuck, for you saying that. Chuck is just joking, everyone. Hey, thank you to everybody. Thank you to Dave Williams, everybody on Zoom, the great guys on BBS. Again, all of our shows at chuckandjulie.com. That'll do it for us on this party Friday. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll be back on Monday.
All right, everybody. Best of luck and get on the bandwagon for the old man amendment.